Hey everybody, this is Andy, aka Love Retro BTW, across Twitter, Instagram, and Twitch. I do a podcast every Saturday called Cafe BTW, a morning gaming podcast, a retrospective look at the wonderful world of retro gaming, from interviews to guests. Join us every Saturday, like a Saturday morning cartoon, starting at 8 a.m., 11 a.m. Eastern. Also, if you're on Twitter, please join the brand new retro gaming community, a place to share, connect, and show your love for the retro gaming community. All the links are down below. And remember, enjoy the Gamers Week podcast.
Coming up on Gamers Week podcast.
So anything that I can play on an Xbox, I can play on a handheld now?
You remember several episodes ago, we were talking about that Xbox dongle?
Dongle. I do remember the dongle.
It'll be slightly more powerful than the dongle, maybe.
A handheld that's slightly more powerful than the dongle.
This stuff just writes itself.
Oh, man. I have not played Mario Kart 8 in... How long has that been out anyways?
8, 9, 10 years.
What?
I know. It's been a hot minute since we've had a new Mario Kart.
Have you been enjoying like the new tracks that have been coming out?
You know, the first batch of the DLC tracks was okay. But we get the second batch tomorrow, actually. So that will be exciting. There's an entirely original track where you drive up a giant Sunday, apparently. So something brand new. Nobody knows the shortcuts or anything yet. It'll be great.
Right. This is probably a map that I might be able to beat Blue on.
Now, let's not get ahead of ourselves.
You're right.
Welcome to Gamers Week Podcast. Like the name says, we analyze the best, worst, and weirdest headlines of the past week in the video game industry. This is episode 33, and today is Wednesday, August 3rd, 2022. Thanks, everyone, for joining us. My name is Blue Williams, and I'll be your host for this evening, but I do have two fine gentlemen with me. My first co-host fuels his CRT weightlifting workouts with deep dish pizza. Everybody say hello to the one and only Donnie G.
And that's why my back is always messed up.
Trying to lift 200 pound CRT TVs all by your lonesome?
No, it's the deep dish pizza.
Okay, fair enough. My second co-host is not actually here. Ryan is absent today. The last we saw him, he had a giant orb weaver spider attached around his neck and was fighting for his life. So I'm sure that all went fine and he'll be back next week.
He's fine.
But in Ryan's place, we have Ludo Timbo, aka Tim, from the Elitist Podcast. How are you, Tim?
Hello. How's it going, everybody? I am kind of stuck on this Orb Weaver spider thing, and I'm shaking a little bit in my chair.
It's best not to think too much about it.
Oh, man. So it's so great to be here. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
Of course. We're so happy you could fill in for us this week. So for anybody who's listening who may not be familiar with you and your show, do you mind explaining to us a little bit about what you do and where people can find you?
Absolutely. Like Blue said, I am Tim. I am one of three hosts of the show, the podcast called The Elitist Podcast. We create and play games about video games. So every week we have guests on whenever we can, and we create a bunch of original and unique games and sometimes steal ideas from old game shows and old trivia board games and stuff like that, and create games for one another. And we play them together and we just share a lot of laughs together. And it's become one of our favorite pastimes. It's something I get so excited for every week. And that's basically what we do. And I love it.
Nice. Ryan, Donnie, and I were all guests on your show. I don't recall off the top of my head what episode it was, but it was really fun.
I remember that. That was awesome. And I was listening to it a little bit today, earlier today, trying to go back a little bit and hear how we acted with you guys and how we have evolved over time, because we're all just noobs in the podcast space and we're trying to pick it up as we go. And I was listening to it. It was almost a little cringy at points.
Yeah, if your podcast isn't a little bit cringy, are you even doing it right?
Exactly. Right? And it was the first time we had three people on at once on the show. And so it was, you know, a matter of managing all of that as well. But I think we held our own really well. And so did you guys in the game. So, and if anybody wants to look that up, you want to check out The Leadist, go to theleadist.com. That's the website we built for the show. I'm looking here at my list and I see that you guys were on episode 37.
37. That's a great number. It's a nice round number.
It is. Played all kinds of games together, including The Leadist Feud.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. It's all coming back to me now.
It really is a great show.
Oh, thank you so much for saying so.
Oh, you're welcome.
Absolutely. So we, of course, will have all the links for The Leadist in the show notes. So when you're done listening here, be sure to head on over to theleadist.com and check out those guys. But for now, let's go ahead and get the show started with our reviews, reactions, and requests. Heroes of Gaming Podcast says, big fan of your stuff, brother. Thanks, brah. We do our best. Crystal Lightstone says, so that hope you have for the Funko Lego game sounds like you're describing Lego Dimensions. It's a great game, and I have absolutely everything for it, but I bet everyone would appreciate a digital edition like what's available on Steam right now for Disney Infinity. And Sims221 says, this is an amazing podcast, and this is the only one I will listen to.
Might I suggest The Leadist Podcast to listen to?
I'm glad you said it.
Thank you so much, Sims221. We are flattered.
Those are such sweet sentiments.
Yes, we love being the only podcast you will listen to, but we do hope you'll give a few others a chance because there's some great podcasts out there.
Agreed. I'm going to do a little something special, and if it doesn't sound right, let me know and I can do something different.
Okay.
Ooh, okay.
And now it's time for the very important poll.
Oh, wow.
Thank you.
The bar has definitely been raised just when you thought it couldn't be any higher.
Now we've brought instruments into it.
Right.
We're going to have a 5-piece band before you know it.
Yep.
All right. Every Monday on Twitter, Gamers Week posts their VIP, very important poll. If you'd like to participate, follow them on Twitter at Gamers Week PC. The question this week, with the popularity of Stray, it made us wonder, what's your favorite cat in video games? We had Morgana from Persona come in at 18.9%. Kate Sith from Final Fantasy VII at 23%. And Meowth from Pokemon at 32%. And others came in at 26.2%. So let's look at some of the comments from the poll. At Hungry Goria said Alphador in Chrono Trigger and all those Chrono Trigger cats. At Fernleaf Flynn, the first cat that came to mind was the one from Monster Party that hurls her babies at you. At Eldest Ghost Kill said the Meowskular Chef from Monster Hunter. That's impressive. At Dream Crashed said Probs Blaze the cat. They didn't utilize her enough, though. And at C. Holland Art said, the cat you get to pet in Spider-Man Miles Morales.
Of course. Any cat you get to pet.
The best cat.
Is the best cat.
I have to completely agree with Hungry Goria about Chrono Trigger.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not necessarily specifically Alphador, but just like the whole cat thing they had going on in that game in general was absolutely brilliant. Both like the consequential and the inconsequential cats that they had in that game, including the ever so wonderful Gato, who has metal joints that if you beat up, you got 15 silver points.
But is there such a thing as an inconsequential cat?
Is there such
a- I guess there
Maybe
is.
Maybe not. Yeah. This cat means nothing to me.
Right.
I just love that in, like, everywhere you went, there was just some random cat that had some part of the show in it. So there was, like, Cadillac in Lean Square that was running the races. There was the random cat that jumped on the switch that made Ozzy fall through the hole in his palace. And if you don't feed the cat in your house, the ending of the game, that a cat jumps through the portal, which made a bunch of fans think that that's why cats show up everywhere, because it's the same cat and it's actually a time traveling cat.
It's pulling a Doctor Who right there.
It's brilliant.
I can't really speak to Chrono Trigger. I've never played it still.
Oh.
I know the groan. We're going on, like, I'm looking at my watch. We're going on what, seven to 8 months of doing the podcast, and every corner, every turn, it's Chrono Trigger, Chrono Trigger, Chrono Trigger, Chrono Trigger, Chrono Trigger, Chrono Trigger, Chrono Trigger.
Well, you did want to go on a podcast with Ryan, just saying.
Exactly. And that's his favorite game. And I did make him a promise that I would play it eventually, but I still have yet to get through The Secret of Mana, which I'm almost finished with. So I'd say once I'm done with that one, then I'll probably fire up Chrono Trigger and maybe complete it within the next 5 years.
Are there any cats in Secret of Mana?
There's the certain vendor who's a cat.
Nice.
And that's about it.
So is that what you voted in the poll?
No, I did not. My vote in the poll was for a little guy named Evil the Cat from Earthworm Jim.
Nice.
Very so, nice.
Wow, what a pool.
The question, like, was kind of lost on me. I'm like, cats in video games, I don't really specifically remember anyone's, like, you know, okay, you got Chester the Cheetah, you've got Felix the Cat, you've got Conker, was he a cat, I guess, maybe? Bubsy was a cat, I guess he was a fox, mm-hmm. Whatever. But, like, nothing really stood out. So I did have to do a little Googling for this answer. I was going through a list of all cats in video games. I was like, no, boring, no. Ah, Evil the Cat. We have a cat in Earthworm Jim that rules over planet Heck, and he's trying to mold the universe in his image or in his likeness, and he's trying to steal Earthworm Jim's suit, which I think he does at one point in the game, and you have to fight him to get it back. But I really liked Evil the Cat and liked the way that he was drawn. So that's my vote.
Yeah, has very strong, like, Pinky and the Brain vibes.
Yes, with big buck teeth.
I remember hearing the Heck music over and over and over again, because after I gave up on that game as a kid, because it was, well, I mean, let's face it, that game had some incredible difficulty spikes in it.
Yeah, it was.
So you'd eventually put in the cheat codes to try to skip levels around, just to try different levels. And anytime you put in a cheat code to go to a different level in that game, every time you beat that level, instead of going directly to the next one, they put you in Heck. So you had to face Evil the Cat again in order to move on with the game, which was brilliant.
Yeah, that was diabolical.
Who's your favorite cat, Blue?
So I actually answered with Cat Mario, but then I went, crap, I should have answered the cats from Cat Quest. You guys know that game?
I have never heard of Cat Quest.
Cat Quest.
Oh my goodness.
I'm not familiar with it.
Are there cats in it?
No, it's full of dogs.
No. It's a metaphor.
Right. It's a pair of indie games, Cat Quest 1 and Cat Quest 2, and they are kind of typical action-adventure games. You walk around on a world map, you beat up bad guys, and you proceed through the story. It's really chill. It's really fun. It's really cute, but the best part is it's absolutely full of cat puns.
Like what? Can you give us an example?
Oh, God. I should have looked one up before I...
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're looking for the perfect example right now. I mean, if you're feline under pressure right now, we can move on.
I don't need to do this. I'll just let him do
right,
it.
Right.
I really want to hear one, so I hope you're kitten.
All right, well, let's move along to our patron shoutouts.
We couldn't do what we do without the help of our gorgeous patrons. Here are the generous folks supporting Gamers Week on Patreon. Crunchy Kong, Sure Snacks, Frank Grande, JNL Game, Love Retro BTW, Steven Sand, Ramboski, Derek and Air, Ducks in Disguise, Jim and Colleen, Games with Coffee, Davey PGH, the Red Ox PDX family, including Shannon and Luke, Zach Huge Thanks, Random Retro Dude, Princess Kitty Mew Mew, Rai Rai's Secret Best Friend, Mega Retro Man, Gametroid, Emo Esque, Bill Tucker, Rye Bread's number one fan, Fruitcake's number one stan, The Wizard of Zardoz, Clayman 71, Great Cyanman 81, BNT Zilligai, and Geek With That. If you like what you hear today, and we really hope you do, please consider joining us on Patreon. Your support helps cover the cost of producing the show, as well as the other cool stuff we'll be doing, like prizes and giveaways. You'll also gain access to our weekly patron-only bonus cast called Gamers Week Uncut, Patrons with Benefits. Visit patreon.com/gamersweek or follow the link in the show notes to learn more.
All right, now let's move on to our headlines for the week. And our headline segment is, of course, proudly sponsored by the Retro Game Club podcast. It's a fantastic, family-friendly retro gaming podcast. In each episode, Rob and Hugh pick two games to play and discuss, as well as news, interviews, and other topics. Currently, they want to know what is a universally disliked game that you actually enjoy. Send your answers to email at retrogameclub.net or follow the link in the show notes.
That's a tough one.
I can think of a universally disliked game that I enjoy right off the top of my head.
Okay. What is it?
Yonoid.
Is that really a universally disliked game?
Everybody hates that game.
I know the hitboxes in it suck, and it's just, it's really tough, but...
Yeah, it's tough, and then the weird card pizza eating contest between every level.
Yeah, that was just a horrible mechanic.
Yeah. What about you, Tim? Do you have one?
I'm trying to think what terrible games I like. I tend to like good games, generally speaking.
Don't we all?
Look at this guy with actual good taste. Whatever.
I've played some interesting games. You know what? I have a really low tolerance these days for games with any types of like frustrating mechanics like that. Like I can... You should see me give up on a game. I can do it at the speed of light. I'm saying that Alt and that F4 on my keyboard are just oh, they make me salivate just thinking about it when it comes to bad games.
Right.
But I guess if I were to go back in time a little bit and try to think about old, I don't know. Did people like Final Fantasy Mystic Quest?
There's a lot of people that don't care too much for it. I'm one of them. I actually like that game.
Okay. All right. Well, maybe it's not universally disliked, but for all the people that don't like it, I'm here to say that I do.
Fair enough.
That's all I got.
I can't think of a game that's universally hated that I like. You know, when you think of universally hated, obviously the two that come to mind are Superman 64 and E.T. the Extraterrestrial. I've not touched E.T. since I was a kid, so I couldn't tell you. And I've never played Superman 64. With everybody bad-mouthing it, I've never wanted to touch it. So trying to think of a universally bad game that I like, I don't think there is one.
All right.
Our tastes are way too discerning for this. From Shack News, 53% of Nintendo Q1 2023 software sales were digital. Nintendo's digital software sales accounted for 53% of its overall software sales for Q1 2023. This number was up 6.1% from Q1 2022, when digital software sales accounted for 46.9%. Nintendo broke this down further, elaborating on some of the titles that helped push this growth. Quote, sales of downloadable versions of packaged software titles such as Nintendo Switch Sports and Mario Strikers Battle League fared well, and sales were also steady for add-on content, including Animal Crossing New Horizons Happy Home Paradise, the company said. Nintendo went on to explain that while more moderate, Nintendo Switch Online is still showing further growth. Quote, regarding Nintendo Switch Online, because more consumers have now purchased multiple consoles, growth in the number of members has become more moderate. However, with the additional increase in sales from the new Nintendo Switch Online Plus expansion pack, overall Nintendo Switch Online sales are showing further growth.
Great.
Yeah, good, great, grand. So we have a digital-only PlayStation and we have a digital-only Xbox. Does this seem to point towards a future where we have a digital-only Switch?
Possibly. Even when you look at the storage capacity of the Switch, you can buy standalone memory cards, if I'm not mistaken. I think you recently did that.
Yeah, you have to. Yeah, I got a terabyte one because it was just bursting at the seams.
So now that storage capacity is cheaper, it's smaller, it's cheaper.
I still got a Black Friday sale on it.
But it's getting there. Within the next couple of years, you can go out. And I remember a time whenever a 512 megabyte USB stick was, it cost a lot. And now we're into terabytes that people are just like, oh yeah, I've got a terabyte stick hanging around. Here you go. You can use this. And they throw them out at conventions and all that stuff.
Geez, do they?
Probably.
I need to go to those conventions.
I think that in a few years, because storage is becoming cheaper and smaller, maybe it would be beneficial to have a digital-only Switch that you have like a 5 terabyte card that you have all of your games on.
I wonder what kind of hardware it takes the Switch and what kind of requirements it takes to build a Switch to include the cartridges on there. Because I feel like because they're cartridges, it can't be much more than just like a tiny peripheral coming off of the main board. Like, I wonder what kind of changes it would make to the device itself, or how significantly cheaper it would be to manufacture them without the cartridge slot.
I don't know. I mean, they're such tiny little carts.
Yeah. But there's also the other components inside that make the cartridge work. So if you don't have to do those, if you don't have to use those, then you're saving a little bit of money, I would assume. I'm not sure how much. I don't know if that's enough for Nintendo to say, okay, we're going to save all this money from not having this little integral part, and that'll go back into our pockets.
Yeah. Well, and part of the draw of like the Xbox Series S is that I believe it's only $300, whereas the X is $500. Whoa. So that's quite a bit of savings. So I wonder if Nintendo could make a difference, considering the Switch itself is only $300.
Right.
Could they make a price difference to where it would make sense to just buy the digital only?
Yeah, that's a great question, because what they'll have to do is sell it at a price that makes it worth it to buy the cheaper version of it.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, why would I give up the opportunity to put cartridges in just in case? And then they have to compare that to how much it would cost to manufacture a new line of devices versus how hard it is to include that hardware capability of the cartridges in it. I'd be curious to see if that'd be something that was economical for them.
Yeah. But another thing that I think might be driving these digital sales, at least I like to think part of the thing that's driving these digital sales, is all the indie games that now have the ability to get their games out on the eShop.
Right.
Of course, they point to Nintendo Switch Sports and Mario Strikers as big reasons why their digital sales were up. But you think about how many indie games never get a physical release at all.
Right. They don't have anybody backing that manufacturing process. So they make the game, they say, okay, here at Nintendo, we're going to, if they worked something out with Nintendo, they say, we're going to put this on the eShop. Now we don't have to worry about manufacturing costs, shipping costs, all that stuff. It's ready to go. We give them the source code, they distribute it, and we just rake in the cash. I can only imagine a lot of indie companies going that way and not having to worry about manufacturing at all.
Right. It makes their games so much more accessible to such a wider audience, not having to have a physical cartridge.
Agreed.
I can't imagine the analytics that it would be required to figure out, okay, how much money can we make off of a cartridge-less console? Because what you have to consider at the same time is infrastructure. Across the country, would these people buy a Switch, and do they have reliable internet access in order to download something? Which maybe I'm being overly sensitive about, but I feel like there's still places where that's unavailable, especially in other countries where the Switch would be available. Maybe not so much in the US. I don't know.
Right.
No, that's a good point. That is a constant source of annoyance, is the Switch always wanting to be connected to the internet. And then if you try to put it in airplane mode and it tries to dissuade you from actually doing it unless you're on an airplane. Yeah. It's really stupid.
But how can it tell?
It can't. It's just trying to bully you into leaving the internet on, which drains the battery stupid fast. I hate that.
I have yet to play my Switch on an airplane. I took it on an airplane, but I didn't play it.
Well, aren't you going to Chicago in a couple weeks?
I am going to Chicago.
then's your chance.
I'll play it on the plane.
Huzzah! Break out that fancy OLED screen and actually let it shine.
And just flex on everybody?
Yep.
Oh, you got the regular Switch? All right, from Engadget, Logitech and Tencent are making a cloud gaming handheld. Logitech and Tencent have announced that they're working on a handheld cloud gaming device. They're blending the Logitech G brand's hardware know-how with Tencent's software prowess. The system should come to market later this year, and it will support multiple cloud gaming services, Logitech said. Tencent and Logitech are working with the Xbox Cloud Gaming and GeForce Now teams at Microsoft and NVIDIA, respectively, so expect the handheld to support both of those platforms at the very least. Whether the device actually goes on sale as scheduled remains to be seen, given the ongoing supply chain crisis that's making production difficult for just about every electronics company. However, many cloud gaming services are accessible through web apps on phones, so the device likely wouldn't need a ton of processing might. It probably won't need to be as powerful as, say, the Steam Deck. Using low-power components that aren't super difficult to come by would make it easier for Logitech and Tencent to actually build the handheld. In any case, we should find out more about the device in the coming months.
Does it seem like we're in the middle of a sort of resurgence of handheld interest in handhelds? We've got the Analog Pocket, the Playdate, the Steam Deck, the Switch Lite, and now this thing.
With the way technology is, it's no longer a handheld. It's just something that you like. Oh, you kind of, if I've got nothing to do, I can play this low quality polygon game. That's like, at least it's going to keep me interested. No, you pretty much have a computer right in your hands,
yeah,
while you're at a ball game, or which you really should be paying attention to the ball game or anything. But with technology becoming so much advanced, you're no longer restricted to just your couch or your computer room.
You got me thinking, yeah, like what market is that trying to serve by making something weaker than the Steam Deck, but maybe more powerful than a phone that could have, right? You know, an MGX Pro or a Backbone installed on it kind of thing?
Yeah, I don't know. It better be cheaper than a Steam Deck, that's for sure.
For sure.
Yep.
But it is kind of nice because we've been saying for years, or people have been saying for years, that the smartphone would kill handheld gaming. And clearly that's not the case, at least right now. There's still a lot of interest in actual dedicated handheld gaming devices.
I mean, that's absolutely true. But I guess the thing for me is that I don't want to, first of all, I don't play a lot of handheld devices. I've got old man eyes. And I can't focus on those little screens and pretty much do anything with them. And I can't imagine, you've got your phones, yes, that have the power to run games on them, but those screens are even smaller than what the Steam Deck is offering or what the Switch is offering with their OLED. I don't think phones could ever really take over what they're doing. Maybe if people had tablets that could do all the different things they want them to do and their personal home computer, if everybody was walking around with, you know, Star Trek style personal home tablets, you know, that can be converted into a console at a moment's notice, that might be something that could take over everything. But in the end, I mean, the phone's got to stay pocket sized that you can, you know, slip into your back pocket and take out with you at night. So I don't think phones could ever really be the handheld console killer.
Yeah, I always kind of thought it was weird when, because people in the industry have been saying that for years, right? And I always thought it was weird. And I think implied in that prediction was the idea that phones could take over handheld gaming as long as people only minded or didn't mind playing only mobile games, which I mind personally.
Yeah, I was going to say.
So I'm really pleased to see this. And people who know me know I'm a big handheld fan. Probably not going to get this thing, though. Like you were saying, Tim, I don't really know why I would need something that's slightly more powerful than a phone, but less powerful than a Steam Deck.
And I don't know what, like, how are you going to get games on it?
There's going to be a little cartridge slot on it.
To me, I'd have to have a little bit more information to see whether or not I'd be purchasing something like this, because realistically speaking, with the amount of games in the Steam library, I'm probably just going to go ahead with the Steam Deck.
So I'm looking it up real fast, and it says that Tencent and Logitech are working with the xCloud Gaming and GeForce Now teams, respectively. So the handheld is expected to support both of those platforms.
So anything that I can play on an Xbox, I can play on a handheld now?
You remember several episodes ago, we were talking about that Xbox dongle?
Dongle. I do remember the dongle.
It'll be slightly more powerful than the dongle, maybe.
A handheld that's slightly more powerful than the dongle.
This stuff just writes itself.
Oh, man.
Okay. I just need more information on it.
Yeah, I think we all do. First, it actually has to come to market, and then we see how it is. But we'll keep an eye out for it in any case. All right, next up from gamesindustry.biz, the industry catches Ouya fever 10 years ago this month. Ouya was a crowdfunded Android-based console promising something that seemed impossible to many at the time. With a funding goal of just $950,000, Ouya was going to launch a new hardware platform complete with a dedicated controller and sell it for just $99. More than 63,000 people wound up backing the Kickstarter to the tune of almost $8.6 million, which remains the most funded video game project ever on the crowdfunding site. Ouya promised a revolution, and many people believed in the vision, some perhaps a bit too much. The first Ouya system started shipping to backers in late March of 2013, and the early reviews were not particularly kind, with The Verge declaring it a million miles away from something worth spending your money on, while Engadget declared it simply not ready for retail. A series of PR missteps followed, including a widely derided commercial featuring a pantsless gamer so upset at paying $60 for the latest military shooter that he fills his room ankle deep with vomit before ripping out his jaw and spine and beating himself about the head and face with them.
What?
I know, what? I'd love to be in that boardroom where this was pitched and everybody said, yeah, do that. That sounds great. The company limped along for another year before calling it quits, with peripheral maker Razer eventually acquiring its software assets. Razer incorporated Ouya into its Forge TV micro console, but pulled the plug on both in 2019. There's a lot to digest here.
Yeah.
That commercial sounds like it went back to the 90s.
I was going to say, that sounds like something, for even as crazy as commercials were in the 90s, that sounds like it would have been pushing the envelope in the 90s.
David Lynch would have looked at that and went, what the hell?
What's this trash?
What does it mean, though? So, I was not aware at all of the Ouya at the time. It was years later before I realized it was a thing. What about you guys?
Oh, I remember watching it. I remember watching that Kickstarter and just being absolutely amazed and totally bought into what they were trying to sell. I mean, I didn't spend any money on it because I was, you know, broke. And I think I just moved to Nashville and hadn't even been working, so couldn't even back the thing. But I said to myself what I usually say these days, I'll just wait for the reviews. We'll see how this goes.
That's not a bad plan of action.
I'm very glad that I ended up doing that. So.
As much as I would like to be involved in like crowdfunding and stuff and to say, oh, yeah, man, I was an early backer of this and it's the greatest thing. Knowing my luck, I would have backed Ouya and it would just have fallen flat like it did. I remember when this thing came out and seeing it in places like Target. And I was just like, what? A game system? Like, I don't know about this. And I'm glad I listened to my instinct because I didn't pick it up. I didn't touch it. And rightfully so, because it sucked.
It doesn't seem as unbelievable these days as it did back then. You know, I think something like this could very well work. And it kind of does. If they made these Roku devices or Amazon Fire or what's the other one? Chromecast kind of devices capable of doing the exact same thing, of just doing streaming live to your TV of Android games, for example, I'd buy in on that.
The key part in that phrase is Android games.
Yeah. It's such a garbage library. Every now and then I'll just lay in bed trying to find an Android game to play on my phone and give up on the list, then try to find it somewhere on Reddit. And Reddit's been taken over by the same marketeers that are bumping the top games that are all just pay to win garbage stuff to the top of the list in the Play Store. And it's just, yeah, yeah. Somebody would have to be, I think the company would definitely have to take a commanding role on that and say, this is stuff that's actually worth playing.
Right. But then again, for $99, what did you really expect?
Right. A $99 system that was going to be on par with everything else that was out at the time, the PlayStation 3, the Xbox.
Nay, it was going to be a revolution. It was going to be better
than
what was out at the time, than the 360 and PlayStation 3.
And I think that's what got a lot of people involved, because when you have these newer consoles that come out from the big heavy hitters like Nintendo and Sony and Microsoft that cost several hundred dollars, at the very least, $400, $500, you're touting $99?
Right.
That's a system that opens up the availability for a lot of families.
Mm-hmm. It does. But it hits right on that too good to be true line.
It does. And when something is too good to be true,
it's the Ouya.
It's the Ouya. It's the Ouya.
I remember being so upset that I ripped out my jaw and spine and I started beating myself over the head and face.
But did you fill your living room ankle deep with vomit first?
No, that's disgusting.
The other is fine, but the vomit is gross.
That's too far.
All right, let's move on to our top three new releases.
South of the Circle, that's on PS5, Xbox Series X and S, PS4, Xbox One, Switch, and PC. South of the Circle is an emotional narrative experience exploring the relationship between Peter and Clara, Cambridge academics caught up in the political conflict of the Cold War. The story focuses on the weight of life choices between career, true love, and the desire to keep our promises. Hindsight. It's on Switch, PC, and iOS. For the creator of Prune, Hindsight is a narrative exploration game spanning the entirety of a woman's life from birth to the present day as she tries to make sense of it all, revisit her childhood home, sort through personal belongings, and step through windows to memories frozen in time. Recipe for Disaster. That's on PC. Recipe for Disaster is a management sim that captures the fast-paced, drama-filled environment of a professional kitchen and dining room. Build your dream restaurant, create recipes, design menus, and manage your staff, all while contending with demanding customers and disastrous situations.
Wow. So, anything here you're interested in, Donnie?
I think this week I'd rather read an old copy of Reader's Digest.
One with the crossword puzzle already done?
Exactly. Than play any of these games that have been announced. I took a look at some of the artwork, I guess, for each one of the games. I'm not into simulation games. They're not my favorite. The artwork for Hindsight and South of the Circle kind of look the same. And just the topics that they're covering don't seem to be up my alley. Not saying anything about playing as a woman trying to go through her life from birth until present day. None of these games sound fun.
They sound very dramatic.
It does. I mean, not that games can't be dramatic, but it's just, not my cup of tea.
What do you think, Tim?
I get where Donnie's coming from on that one. But recently, I don't know if you guys watch the show, but I just got finished watching The Bear on Hulu. That is all about the chaos of a really popular restaurant in downtown Chicago. And it's an excellent, excellent show. I'd highly recommend it to anybody that would be interested in something like that. It's stressful. It's a drama, so with some comedy elements to it. And it is stressful. It is masterfully acted and written just so well that the Recipe for Disaster kind of stood out to me for a second there. But then I remembered how stressed I was watching that show.
Right.
And so maybe sometime down the road when I get over, you know, that anxiety, I might try Recipe for Disaster. But it's still a little, I don't know, maybe cartoony for my taste. I don't know.
Blue, which one of these sounded good to you this week?
So yeah, I'm kind of agreeing with you guys. It's a rough week. I do not go for narrative games, especially the serious dramatic type. But I admit that I do have a soft spot for restaurant sims. I really like Diner Dash. I really like Cook Serve Delicious. So this one, I would maybe give it a try. I don't know about drama-filled environment and managing your staff so much if they're trying to like bring a dramatic story element to it. That's not really what I'm looking for out of those types of games. But I would maybe still give it a try.
All I hear is Gordon Ramsay in the back going, "You f***ing moron!
What are you?"
I'm an idiot sandwich. I don't want that type of stress while playing a video game. No, thank you.
But you'll play Tetris.
I don't have somebody yelling at me in the background.
Are you f***ing stupid?
You never know. Maybe you're the one that gets to yell those things at people and it'd be like That's a huge stress for
you. I'm the boss now. All right, ladies and gentlemen, let's talk about the Gamers Week podcast High Score. So week one of the first ever Gamers Week podcast High Score tournament is now in the books. Congrats to Mega Retro Man. Winner of week one's Metal Slug contest with a score of 1,456,690. Mega Retro Man really setting the bar quite high on that one. So just as a reminder, this is a five-game tournament, and all games will be MAME arcade games. The winners of each week will get a spot in the finals, like Mega Retro Man, and the overall winner will receive a very valuable trophy. Wink. The game for week two is Punch-Out. Play kicks off on Friday, August 5th. And you'll have until Tuesday, August 9th at 9 a.m. Central to submit your score. Remember that, 9 a.m. Central. Submissions will be closed at 9 a.m. Central.
Wait, what time?
9 a.m. For a full set of rules, check out the pinned tweet on my Twitter account. That's at DonnieGRetro on Twitter. Or follow the link in the show notes.
All right, let's move on to our main topic. This past week has seen a ton of Sony news. So for our main topic tonight, we're doing a roundup of PlayStation headlines. First up from IGN, Sony is already retiring Accolades, a PS5 launch feature. Sony will be retiring PS5's Accolades feature later this year, as players have not used the awards-based system as much as the company anticipated when it was unveiled at launch. Accolades were initially introduced to foster a more positive gaming experience and bring the community together by encouraging players to send one of three accolades: helpful, welcoming, or good sport to a fellow gamer based on their performance in an online multiplayer match. Players could then see how many accolades they had racked up by looking at their PSN profiles. In fall of 2022, the accolades feature on the PS5 will no longer be supported, Sony said in a statement. The feature hasn't seen the level of usage we anticipated, so we are refocusing our efforts. We encourage the community to continue to send positive messages to one another.
But we ain't helping you.
I remember hearing about this prior to the PS5's launch and going, that's stupid. It feels like when you're in kindergarten or first grade or whatever, and the teacher says, oh, good job, and gives you a sticker. Like, I mean, I like stickers, but
I was going to say, what's wrong with getting stickers?
Well, what's wrong with it is I'm no longer in first grade.
Yeah.
And, it doesn't provide any motivation anymore. It's like a patronizing little pat on the head to say, oh, you were a good sport today. Ugh. Shut the hell up.
I gave you a GG, be happy and sit down.
Right.
Like, go ahead and give this person a rating. Why? What does that rating do? It just lets somebody know that, oh, they're going to be helpful. Who cares?
I don't know who cares. And apparently nobody else knew who cares either.
My work tries to do this where they're like, hey, you can give this person an award or some positive feedback and yada, yada, yada. And I'm just like, no, I just want to stick to myself. I don't really care about rating other people.
I've worked in companies that do that too, and I've never seen it be successful anywhere. I don't know if that says something like deeply disturbing about human nature or if people just don't respond to superficial praise, and you know, that could be it too.
I guess it's about just incentives, right? Because you don't really have any in the gamer space. You have that in the workspace, right? To get along with your coworkers and to create a positive environment for you to be in, because it directly affects you if it's not positive, you know? But in the gamer space, I mean, geez. There's some negativity kind of flowing around there, and I don't think accolades were ever going to fix that.
No. And of course, it begs the bigger question. I mean, at least Sony tried something. Is there something that can be done to combat that level of negativity that exists in online gaming?
I doubt it. I think it'll always be there.
Remove all privacy features. Right.
Especially when you can teabag somebody in a game.
That's right. Yeah.
Humans are the problem. That's what it comes down to.
You're like a virus.
A cancer of this planet. You are a plague.
That's always my favorite in movies, when the villain makes their speech and you find yourself agreeing with them.
You're like, son of a he was right.
I'm sorry. From GameSpot, Sony worries players could jump to Xbox if Microsoft owns Call of Duty. Microsoft's plan to acquire Activision Blizzard is currently being scrutinized by regulatory bodies across the world, and in Brazil, Sony's official response to that government's questions has been published. According to those documents, Sony believes that once Microsoft owns the Call of Duty franchise as part of the acquisition, it'll have the power to influence users' console choices. Quote, Call of Duty is so popular that it influences users' choice of console, and its community of loyal users is entrenched enough that even if a competitor had the budget to develop a similar product, it would not be able to rival it, end quote. Back in February, Microsoft reiterated its intention to continue developing Activision franchises for competing console platforms and said that it would continue supporting Call of Duty on PlayStation, quote, beyond the existing agreement, end quote, and into the future. Microsoft had previously confirmed that it would honor any existing publishing agreements, specifically 2022's Modern Warfare 2, Call of Duty Warzone 2 in 2023, and a new Call of Duty core release in late 2023.
But all these players are going to jump to an Xbox if they own it. Yeah.
Yeah, isn't that the point of buying studios and having exclusives? The freaking point of having them is to influence gamers' decisions.
Yeah. Okay. I'll be a little devil's advocate here. Online games specifically, ones that, you know, it could be really fun and really a good experience for the user to be able to have an online experience with somebody that's got a different console. I think that's still something we should, you know, be striving for and hoping for when it comes to gaming and proprietary IPs.
Absolutely. I don't know if, I mean, we're all old enough to remember the console wars of the 90s and how each one of them had console specific games that would come out and be developed for them. So back in the day, like that was a tough choice of being either Super Nintendo or Sega Genesis or what have you. And it wasn't until they started with like the PlayStation and the Saturn, and that's when you started seeing a lot of these games that were on the same one. I mean, even Sega Genesis and Super Nintendo had that, but it seemed like back in the 90s, it was more of console specific releases for each one that you didn't have for the other one. So it really made you decide which one you wanted. Now today, I don't really see that all that often. There's games like Forza, I think, for the Xbox. You know, obviously Sony has their Gran Turismo, so it's like potato tomato. But you know what I was trying to say.
Yep. Right here with you.
Well, I did on purpose, but you know, she laughed. Call of Duty is popular. There really is. I think the last series that tried to pop up and rival that was Medal of Honor, when they revamped everything and tried to make a Call of Duty Modern Warfare clone that people didn't really take to. And because it was produced by EA, you know, rightfully so.
That is the problem right there.
That is the problem. When you have something like Call of Duty that you're now putting directly on one specific console. With consoles costing as much as they do you really think people are going to run out and spend $500 on an Xbox just to play Call of Duty? Maybe.
But I think that's also something to remember is that because you don't play on a console, you play on a PC. And there's no way that they're ever going to take Call of Duty off of PC. So it's never truly going to be exclusive to Xbox. That would be crazy. Sony's just whining that there is some conceivable future where they wouldn't have a piece of that pie, which sounds ridiculous. I don't see them putting God of War and Horizon Forbidden West on Xbox in the name of saying that we want to make sure that everybody can be able to play this.
Right.
It's pretty darn hypocritical of them to be complaining about this. Now, to be fair, Call of Duty is far and above anything that God of War and Horizon Forbidden West are able to accomplish with their player base. Call of Duty is up there with like Lord of the Rings and Star Wars. So it is a much bigger pie that Sony's complaining about, but the root of their argument is the same. They love their exclusives, and this is kind of silly for them to complain about.
Does PlayStation have anything near equivalent that they came out with, like a shooter like Call of Duty?
Not that I'm aware of. I thought they tried to steer away from the shooter audience because Microsoft had that group on lockdown.
Well, then cry more, Sony, if you're not going to make the effort to even try.
When I think of Sony, I think of RPGs. But when I think of Microsoft or what have you, I do think of shooters. So it's like, I know you want it all, but I mean, go with what you're known for.
And especially because Microsoft has said, at least in the foreseeable future, it's not making it exclusive. They just want to make sure that they never can.
Right. And they could totally pull a 180. They could say, oh, no, we're not going to make it exclusive. And then bam, as soon as the ink is dry, they're like, nope, it's Call of Duty. It's exclusive on the Xbox. Mm-hmm. Plot twist. All right. From Games Radar, official PlayStation Mobile controller coming from Backbone. Backbone is partnering with PlayStation to launch an officially branded version of its popular mobile controller. The PlayStation Edition Backbone 1 is exactly what it looks like, a Backbone controller styled after the PS5's DualSense controller. Its white design, colored face buttons, and matte finish mirror PlayStation's newest flagship controller, though its staggered analog sticks are a holdover from the Backbone's original, more Xbox-like design. Backbone's controllers have been well received by folks looking to sharpen their mobile gaming experience or emulate a controller while using console remote play. And the PlayStation Edition was designed to support the same functionality, though only on iPhone for now. Backbone says it was also tailor-made to work with the PS5's Pulse 3D headset, which can be connected directly to the PlayStation Backbone. The Backbone app will also feature special integrations with the PlayStation and PS Remote Play app that make the experience even more special, says Backbone. Who's the person that's carrying around a controller with them for their mobile games?
Yeah, it does kind of defeat the purpose of having a phone with you to play when it's convenient. If you have to lug around a controller that's probably just as big as the phone.
I'm looking at the picture of it, and yes, the controller is just as big as the phone.
Could it fit into a fanny pack?
Well,
if that's the case, I'm covered.
Mom, could you put this in your purse?
I ain't got no more room.
Yeah, I don't know. This kind of goes back to what we were saying of when we were talking about the handheld coming from Logitech and Tencent. Mm-hmm. More of this interest in handheld and gaming on the go.
Yeah, and if you're the type of person that does that, if you're always active, always on the go, you don't have a Switch, you don't have a Steam Deck, but you have an iPhone and you want to play that type of game with a controller, great, go ahead.
That's a very specific set of qualities, though.
I feel like I had an epiphany recently that sometimes I think back of how convenient and how easy it is to just kind of do a thing that I want to do with technology and then think about if I had tried to do that 3 or 4 years earlier, it wouldn't have been possible because the version of what I needed wasn't there. And I think this is just a kind of a continuation of that same kind of philosophy that, you know, well, this is for the people that want to play PlayStation games on their phone, that you can use your PlayStation Backbone. And there's got to be at least a little bit of a market out there that that will maybe make this worth it.
I don't know. Is this maybe a compromise as opposed to Microsoft and Sony putting out actual dedicated handheld devices? Just use your phone and we'll give you a controller.
That's exactly what we were talking about. I mean, it makes sense to me, you know?
Yeah.
Rather than making a piece of hardware that's weaker than a Steam Deck, stronger than a phone.
Just right in the middle.
Just give me the damn phone.
Yep.
Yeah, I don't know. This is not for me, though. If I was going to attempt to play games on my phone, it would make it a whole hell of a lot easier, but...
Now, to be fair... So, I have an iPhone, and I'm pretty sure that I could display my iPhone on a TV, right? So, if I... Let's just say, going back to your topic, Tim, of having an emulator on your phone, like a PlayStation, N64, SNES, whatever, all the classic retro emulators that you could have on your phone, you can display on a TV screen, and instead of holding your phone and using that as a controller and getting it all smudged up with grease and stuff, guess what? You've got a controller. Now you have an actual physical controller that it's basically just like having any one of your retro consoles at the tip of your fingers that you can play with an actual controller. And I think that's a good idea.
Oh, but then there's also, you know, controllers that can directly connect over Bluetooth or Wi-Fi to your television, you know, like Samsung's
absolutely
got hardware that lets you do that sort of thing. So then you're cutting out the market even more of who would actually end up using that kind of device.
True. Ooh,
lots of options. That's for sure.
And I do like variety.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I'm probably going to stick with my Switch Lite though.
Yeah. You're not wrong.
This is cool, though. I don't know. I really like this kind of thing, despite how much I probably never use it. But just this kind of thing, this kind of philosophy of making every possible variation of a specific thing, variations in every possible way on one kind of specific idea, so that maybe, you know, 2 or 3 years down the road, I decide that I want to play a game under X conditions. I wonder if that exists, and Google it for the first time and say, well, I'll be damned. 3 years ago, there was a DualSense controller that was released by Backbone, you know, and that'll be the exact thing that happens that will bring me so much joy for tiny little things like these.
Yeah. That matrix flow chart is like, does this happen? Yes. What about this? Yeah. Over here. Yes. Here. This is your option. Holy shit. Okay.
All right, before we move on, let's take a quick break to talk about our sponsor. This segment is proudly sponsored by the Elitist Podcast. It's a show where three friends and occasional guests play games about video games, including trivia, game show games, and more. Tim, what is this week's trivia question?
In honor of RGB's absence, here's the question. On June 23rd, 1994, Nintendo fans rejoiced at the official announcement of a brand new console, the Nintendo Ultra 64. However, that name wouldn't last. A little over a year later, the console name was changed. Our question for you, the director of what game series proposed the simplified moniker Nintendo 64?
The director of what game series?
Uh-huh.
Oh, okay. What the hell? What? That's
yeah, no, I'm trying to really entice people with this one.
Who's the director's cousin's former roommate?
Well, there was an option here, because I could have gone with the question about why they changed it from Ultra 64, because I had read an article that seemed to imply that Ultra might have been owned by Konami.
Okay.
But apparently that was a rumor. And Nintendo claims otherwise, that it wasn't actually owned by Konami and there was no trademark or copyright issues.
It was our idea the whole time.
Yeah. Ended up looking too deep and ended up finding the answer was way less sexy. So I had to go with something more obscure.
I'm going to say Mario Kart.
Mm-mm. Yep, pretty nut.
Huh. I'm going to say Donkey Kong Country.
Nope. The answer might surprise you.
All right. Well,
I think it will.
Tune into the Elitist Podcast this Wednesday to hear the answer. You can find the Elitist on your favorite podcast platform, and we'll also have their links in the show notes. All right. Well, of course, Professor Rybread is not here today. So instead of our usual Gaming History 101 segment, we are going to take a page out of the Leetus podcast book. And Tim has a trivia game for us.
That's right. On the Leetus, we try to create unique games to play on the show with each other and with our guests. There's a fair amount of experimentation. Some work well and some, well, not so much.
It's okay. We like experimentation.
But then some come along that become absolute staples, ones that we bring back as many times as possible without getting annoying about it. So I'm excited to bring one such game here to share with you folks in the fantabulous Gamers Week community, a little game I like to call Movie Game Smash-Up.
Ooh. Ah. I remember this.
In this game, you two, Donnie and Blue, will work together and I will give you a clue. And the answer will be a video game and a movie smashed together by a word or a syllable or a sound.
I'm going to be so bad at this.
I'll give you some examples here to help clarify. So here's a clue. I'd bet this mustachioed oil baron might be the type of man that could survive if he woke up in the hunter's dream.
Mustachioed oil baron.
Yep. I bet this mustachioed oil baron might be the type of man that could survive if he woke up in the hunter's dream.
There will be Bloodborne?
That is absolutely correct.
Holy sh!
Yeah. Oh, I'm going to be so bad at this.
Right? It clicked all of a sudden.
So those have become the ones we call the easier ones because they're connected by a word. I put that in quotes because what makes these more the other ones more challenging is sometimes they're connected by a syllable rather than a word. And I'm going to give you an example of that one too.
Okay.
So here's a clue. The only thing that's going to stand in the way of his dreams of becoming a famous musician is dinosaurs.
Uh-oh.
I'm typically good at trivia, but you against the ropes so far with these two.
All right, I'll help you out here. So what's a game where you go after dinosaurs?
Primal Rage?
Yeah.
That's one of them.
Or okay. A Turok?
Turok. And then there's a Mark Wahlberg movie where he wants to become a famous musician.
Oh, right. What's it called?
Oh, Almost Famous?
No, it's Turok Star.
That's absolutely correct. Turok Star. Okay.
Ooh.
Yeah. So you see how that's got like a sound connection rather than a word connection.
Okay. Yep.
There's only one or two of these on my list. Okay. I will warn you when the answer is one of those types. And to make things a little easier, I add a little spice to this edition.
Ooh.
These are all done by decade. Both the game and the movie in the answer are from the same decade.
Okay, good.
Yep, and we'll go ahead and do them in order. So you have the option of starting in the 1970s and working your way up to the 2020s, or vice versa. Which direction would you like to head?
I am not big on the 70s, so I'd say we might want to just start with that and get it out of the way.
Yeah, I agree. My instinct says start with the past, move forward.
That's perfect. Okay, we'll start with the 1970s then, and that means this one has a sound link. This is one of the few.
Great.
Okay. Yep. It's okay. It'll be good. Here's your clue. Just inside the border of Wyoming, green text pops up in the center of the screen. You have died of xenomorph.
Okay. So it's Oregon Trail and Alien.
Yeah. Smash them together.
Oregon Trailian?
That is correct. The Oregon Trailian. Hey,
good job. I was trying to work out how to smash those together.
All right, well done. We'll go to the next one. 1980s. Here we go.
Yes.
The only way you could become a full-fledged, super edgy biker vampire is if you feed for the first time on blood-flavored jelly beans.
Go for it, Donnie.
Well, it's the Lost Boys and jelly beans. Jelly beans, jelly beans, jelly beans.
Lost Boy and his blob?
That is correct. The Lost Boy and his blob.
Oh, nice.
Oh, God. I love, made me laugh so hard. Okay. 1990s. This is a... Okay.
I just want to say that if Ryan was here, he would have groaned and checked out on that last question. So.
Probably. He would have definitely had to pout about it somehow.
I may or may not have specifically chosen that one.
Thank you.
Just so that he can hear it. All right. This is probably the toughest one. 1990s, because it was hard to make it. A young and dashing Brad Pitt only has 150 days to find a water chip, but he should watch out for Yao Guai or else run the risk of suffering, quote, a good death.
I'm kind of confused.
I'm going through all the Brad Pitt movies that I've seen in my head, and none of them are matching up with that.
What about the other part of the clue? The 150 days to find a water chip. Does that spark joy?
150. This does not spark joy.
No. Okay.
150 days to find a water chip.
Mm-hmm. What about the words Yao Guai?
Well, that's gremlins, right?
No, that's Mogwai.
Okay.
Yowgli. Oh, Yowgli is that's the Jungle Book.
No, that's Mowgli.
That's right. Oh my God. Okay, I'll go ahead and give you guys this one.
It.
this is good. It was it's Legends of the Fallout.
Okay. Yeah. I've never played Fallout.
I felt bad for that one, but I figured it was a little less obscure than the other one I came up with for the 1990s, which was Cop and a Half-Life.
Cop and a Half-Life.
All right. 2000s, here we go. Next one's up. Long before Affleck donned the Batsuit, he wore something a bit more stylish. Wait, come to think of it, both of these titles had ambiguous female companion deaths. What, were they both demons?
Daredevil. Daredevil, devil, dare. You're making me look so stupid here, Tim.
No. You're good. This was the first game, and there's five of them now in the series, but the first one came out in 2000s.
Daredevil May Cry.
That is correct. Daredevil May Cry.
Well done.
I actually came up with a bunch of them for 2000s. I didn't write the clues for him, but I got School of Rock Band, Perfect Dark Knight, and Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon Age Origins.
That's good. Raise your hand if you saw Daredevil in the theaters.
Boy,
raising my hand.
Yeah, raising my hand.
Did you stay for the whole thing?
Yeah, I did.
Reluctantly. None of it was my idea.
It was mine.
All right, 2010s. Some folks say movies adapted from books should try to stay close to the source material, but I, for one, think it'd be awesome if the MC ran away on a motorcycle and dealt with hordes of zombies after faking her own murder and framing her husband.
Framing her. Oh, that's Gone Girl.
Motorcycle hordes of zombies.
Oh, what's that? Is that, Days Gone By? Days Gone By Girl.
Days Gone Girl is the answer. Days Gone Girl. Okay. Well done.
I'm just going to sit back and let Donnie take this.
This is the last one.
All right.
2020s. This is a sound link between the two titles.
Okay.
The 2021 remake of a modern tale of star-crossed lovers still can't hold a candle in the tear-jerking department to witnessing a young cartoon owl getting killed in the silent woods.
What? That sounds like a horrible game.
Yeah. It was very tear-jerking. I put a secondary clue on this one, too. I said, I'd rather square off against a shark or a jet than a shriek.
2021 remake.
Well, it sounds like Romeo and Juliet, right?
Maybe, but there wasn't a remake of that.
It was a musical that was a modern telling.
Okay. Oh, freaking, what is it? I know the songs. I just can't think of it. West Side Story. There it is.
Okay.
West Side.
There was a sound link.
So...
A shriek, West Side.
A shriek is also a giant, terrifying owl.
I don't remember a game with an owl.
No.
All right. Here it is. You ready?
Yep.
Man, that sucks. We got to end on a loss.
But I also wrote down one more funny one, so I'll just say that, and it'll make everybody laugh, and everything will be better.
Okay, that works then.
West Side Story and The Will of the Wisps. Ori and The Will of the Wisps.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a tough one.
Ori. All right. I wasn't putting two and two together on that one.
I wanted this one to work so bad, but one was unfortunately in the 70s and the other was in the 80s. But I came up with The Boy and the Plastic Bubble Bobble.
That's good. That's good.
So I'm just going to save that and I don't know, use it on my co-star sometime.
There you go.
Oh my God. I've seen that movie. I don't know why I've seen that movie, but I've seen that movie.
It was on Saturday morning, or the Saturday afternoon movie back in the day.
So I'll do a shameless self-plug. If you want to hear more of the same of those, we do them on The Leadist every so often, and you can find them on our website. You can go right to the search on our website and type in Smash Up, and you can bring up all the episodes where we play that game so you can hear more of those.
Definitely check them out. It's a really fun show.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Thanks for playing with me, guys.
Yeah, oh, thanks for bringing the game. That was really nice. All right, let's go ahead and wrap up this episode. And thank you so much for listening to episode 33 of Gamers Week Podcast. And a big thank you to the Retro Game Club Podcast, The Leadist Podcast, and Love Retro BTW for sponsoring this episode. Don't forget to check out their links in the show notes. If you want to connect with Gamers Week, follow us on Twitter at Gamers Week PC. Email us at gamersweekpodcast@gmail.com. Visit our merch store at gamers-week-podcast.creator-spring.com or... If you want to do it the easy way, follow the link in the show notes. Join us on Patreon at patreon.com/gamersweek. And finally, since you made it all the way to the end of this episode, please leave us a rating and a review to let us know how we did. We really do value your feedback. And while you're there, consider subscribing on iTunes, Spotify, or your podcast platform of choice. Tim, thank you so much for being here tonight. This was really fun.
Oh my gosh, thank you so much, you guys, for having me on. That was great. I would do that again anytime you let me know. You ever need to sub in, I'll be here. I'll be here in a minute.
It was awesome. Definitely a pleasure.
Yeah, well, if Ryan doesn't escape from that giant spider, you know, we'll give you a call.
It's probably crawling on his face right now. And he's not even aware of it.
I'm never coming back.
So right there, you should do the Marv screen.
All right, good night, everybody.
Good night, guys.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Sound like Blue. The other Blue.
Did that sound like me, yes. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Could you put this in your purse?
Welcome to Gamers Week Uncut.
Welcome to Gamers Week Uncut.
Welcome to Gamers Week Uncut, patrons with benefits. This is the unscripted, patron-only bonus cast with less editing and more dirty jokes. We don't know where the conversation will go, but we're sure it will be weird.
This fish just went right on my nipple, and I'm just like...
I Google Street Fighter 6. The first search result that comes up is people think they can see Ryu's dick in the Street Fighter 6 reveal.
Listen up here, kids. You're not going to want to get one of those VDSTDs things, right? Make your fall off. When you go, grab a pro. You'll be doing it for America.
That was perfect.
If you want to hear weekly episodes of our patron-only bonus cast, join us at patreon.com/gamersweek.